You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 26 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And we are back! It has been 3 long years, but we can finally take our fabulous Nostra Tristan and Kevin Domus hats out of storage.
Well, you came in so hot there. First off, it's only been 2.5 years. It's like 2 years and 8 months, if we're being technical.
3 long years.
But also, I wanted to quote someone we were going to talk about later in the podcast and say, and we back, and we back, and we back. I thought that would be the appropriate way to go.
Okay, that sounds good.
But you came in so hot over the top.
Yeah, whatever you were going to do. A lot more singing. Now that we're back, we're going to sing a lot more.
I think we've promised that, yes. So welcome back to those of you who listened to the Fabulous Peltoncast during the fall and winter of 2013-14 when we last recorded. And to those of you who are new to the podcast, welcome.
I like that you're saying this as if it's multiple people.
Yes, to the person who is new to the
podcast. The listener, welcome back.
Yeah, yeah. We appreciate it. Make yourself at home. We thought we should explain to those of you, I can't figure out how to singular that, who is new, what we're doing here.
Oh, it's a podcast.
It is. That's true.
Oh, do you need me to explain to you what a podcast is?
I think people have got it, because one of the big differences between now and when we last did a podcast is podcasts are so hot.
Are they?
Everyone has a podcast.
That's why we're doing one, is because the market's not saturated at all.
Yeah, I mean, we really had our opportunity, I think, to like kind of own the Seattle sports podcast market in 2013. That is long gone now.
Yeah.
Those days are past. But a little bit, I think, of background. So I feel like I need to go with the Troy McClure here. You may know me from such websites as I write about the NBA and sometimes college basketball for ESPN Insider. Formerly wrote for Basketball Prospectus, and then also locally covered the Sonics for their team website before they moved to Oklahoma City, and the WNBA Seattle Storm for their team website.
Wow, you went through a lot of stats.
I did.
You're a stats guy.
Yes.
So that makes sense.
It does. Your credentials for talking about sports are?
None.
Yeah.
Knowing you.
That's pretty much it.
Your credentials for talking about sports are?
We're brothers.
The dichotomy is,
we should explain that.
We're brothers. We don't have the same last name. I changed my last name. It's confusing.
It is.
Right.
But it's not. We don't call it the Peltoncast just because of my giant ego. It is because it is the name that we did previously share.
The fabulous part is because of your giant
ego.
That
is true. That is true.
But the relationship is, you work in sports, right?
Yes.
I've been told. Not a fan, personally.
Well, you don't subscribe to ESPN Insiders. You have no idea.
I'm still promised a subscription by your mom. Still waiting on that one. You Peltons have been letting me down a lot. And then I work in music, right?
Yes.
Continuing the long lineage of brothers, one who works in sports and one who works in music, of the Divine Brothers.
Yes. It's basically the two of us. That's it.
And so I work at a booking agency called the Billions Corporation. Previously was the talent buyer for a music venue in Seattle called the Vera Project, which I was at earlier tonight.
There you go. But this is basically the conversations that we were already having throughout our life. Mm-hmm. And we just decided to record them for everyone else to hear.
Because we thought they were so interesting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Again, the arrogance. With maybe a little bit more statistical preparation. And, you know, I think if you're someone who's looking for in-depth analysis of a specific team, this is not the right podcast for you.
You have to tell people to turn it off right now.
Yeah, especially if that team is the Mariners or the Sounders. Like, we're not going to have expert-level analysis of those two teams.
But if you love hydroplane racing...
That's true. That is...
Or the Seattle Storm, women's basketball in general, you might be the world's foremost expert on women's basketball.
Not the world's foremost, but certainly on a Seattle sports podcast.
What about hydroplane racing?
You know, there are other people who are bigger experts. Again, I just don't think that's really translated to the podcast market, per se.
Okay. So anyway, if you like women's basketball and hydroplane racing, this is the podcast for you.
Are you in luck? Are you ever? There's like one other person who likes that combination of two things.
Who's that? The listener.
Yeah.
but beyond that, right, we're going to touch on things like basically all of the Seattle sports, whatever is in vogue at the time, right? Mostly the Seahawks, Husky football, Husky basketball, a little bit of Blazers, completely randomly some Italian soccer.
Are we going to keep doing that?
Yeah,
I wasn't sure whether we're going to keep doing Italian soccer. The Sounders will certainly come up, even though, like I said, it's maybe not our foremost area of expertise. It's still an interest. And I think the other thing that's going to distinguish us is that there will be a heavy statistical element to what we're doing. Mm-hmm. It's just us reading lists of statistics most of the time.
Yeah, that's why it's a good podcast.
But no, we'll use Football Outsiders DVOA, Football Power Index on ESPN for college football, Ken Pomeroy's metrics when we get to college basketball season, and try to talk about things probabilistically instead of just, well, are they going to win or are they going to lose?
Mm-hmm. So the things that get really good ratings and a lot of listeners, black and white, are they going to win? Are they going to lose? And we're trying to steer away from that.
As far away as possible.
but also beyond that, right? Any of the things that are non-sports is whatever we're interested in at that time. At various times, that might be trying to find the best cookie in Seattle.
Yep. Food.
It might be me trying to convince you to try all of the best burgers in Seattle and you not being interested in that.
It might be a fun thing to do.
It might be coming up with classic food sneaks in the city of Portland. Also, really a lot of Portland food recommendations.
Yes.
We don't have time. Portland food recommendations than you could possibly imagine.
We don't have time for that today, unfortunately.
I know. I want to talk about food so bad. You know, I went to Sunset Fried Chicken for the first time.
I did not know that.
We can't talk about this, though.
Yeah, we'll save that for next week.
There's too much to talk about.
And then also craft beer.
And then craft beer. So speaking of craft, is that good? Do we feel good?
Well, we didn't mention...
Have we reintroduced ourselves?
Well, our name is Hove. We didn't mention culture, occasional TV shows. Strictly you talking about prestige TV.
Oh, yeah. And you talking about Frank on a Bash.
Yes.
And I think we talked about this in the first ever episode, like four or five years ago when the first episode happened.
Yeah, but the audio quality was so bad. The listener couldn't even tell. And then music, which we will be discussing later in this very episode.
Are we good?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so we've been reintroduced.
Yeah.
Okay. So typically we're going to drink, you know, your IPAs, beers with as much alcohol as possible in them, as sour as possible.
No.
You know, things that are borderline undrinkable, right? Things that have the word fresh hop, that you know what the hops are that went into them.
So we'll choose a beer or sometimes two each week to kind of highlight and discuss as we drink it during the podcast.
And today I have a little treat for you. You have no idea what's coming, right?
I mean, I might have a little idea.
Do you? Oh, you know what it is? It's a little bit of a prestige beer around here.
Is it newly introduced?
Right.
Fresh to the market?
Fresh to the market. You know, the cans only been available for a couple weeks, right? Except back in like 1954.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
I did see
right?
one when
for
I walked
episode
in.
One. I figured that we needed to drink. I hid it in a Seahawks lunchbox with the purple cans for the dog's house. Look at that. Purple and gold cans.
That is very timely.
This right here is the Mountain Freshest beer. And this tastes like Yakima Valley hops. We've got the Winter Jubilee can of Rainier beer, the official beer of the Fabulous Pelton Cast.
Wait, we could get a sponsor. So let's back off on that.
For now.
You know, the Rainier Jubilee cans are one of the greatest triumphs of marketing that I have ever seen.
They really are. I have a second child because of the Rainier Jubilee cans. You wouldn't know it, but I do.
Huh. It makes you want to drink Rainier so much more than just seeing the normal traditional Rainier cans.
It's true. I almost don't want to put this in my koozie.
And it tastes so much better, too, having had one of these a couple nights ago.
Well, a toast to being back.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I haven't talked to you in 32 months.
Yes.
How's it been going?
We've got so much to catch up on.
Did you know that the Seahawks were in the Super Bowl and passed from the one-yard line?
I don't want to talk about it.
Oh, okay.
Still too soon.
I've had two or three children since we last talked.
That's true.
But more importantly, look at this can.
It's phenomenal.
Ugh.
It's so good looking.
You know what that tastes like? That tastes like the best comeback in Seattle sports history.
Does it?
Yeah. Do you know what that is?
Is it us?
I don't know. Is it us? I was hoping you would know what it was because I have no answer. No, it's either the 95 Mariners coming back to reach a one-game playoff against the California Angels.
At that time, yes.
Or it could be game 5 coming back, right?
Yeah, that's a candidate. What about the Seahawks in the 2014 NFC Championship
game? NFC Championship game coming back right here. That's what this tastes like.
There you go. That's a phenomenal taste. That goes down smooth.
It tastes like the Purple Haze defense coming back this year under Chris Peterson.
Sounds like us celebrating the 25th anniversary of the 1991 Husky team.
Oh, that's what that tastes like to you?
Yeah.
Well, it only tastes like comebacks to me.
Huh.
Anyway, you're going to have to fill later as I go and drink a second one of these.
Do we want to start by talking about music this week?
Of course we do. So as you know, wait, as you don't know, I'm going to have to introduce everything that I've done in my yes. life up till this point to you. As you know, this last week, kind of randomly, I went to go see Kanye West, Schoolboy Q, and then Chance the Rapper within a 5-day span.
That's a pretty epic week.
As far as like modern hip hop, right? Like some of the biggest names. I got to see some songs. You know, I really like to talk about seeing the two separate parts of a rap song yes. by two different artists.
Yes.
Right? So this week saw that part by Schoolboy Q combined between Kanye and Schoolboy Q 3 days apart. It's almost like, why wasn't the show just all three of them?
That would have been convenient.
That would have been a big tour. Also, did not see Kirk Franklin, unfortunately. But saw most of Ultralight Beam collectively.
Nice.
Yeah. So those are two that I notched off my list.
Is Kirk Franklin touring these days?
Just God's Property.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. He's probably touring casinos. I actually am pretty sure that I've seen his name.
It seems likely.
You've driven down to Portland a lot. You've seen the reader board on the Emerald Queen Casino. And you know that you've seen Kirk Franklin's face on there.
There's one billboard that's right when you exit to go to the Moda Center in Portland, and it's sometimes music, usually comedy though. That and Tracy Morgan, I can tell you now, is playing at whatever casino that is.
A lot of Tracy Morgan at that casino. So I thought this would be an appropriate time after seeing those three artists and then Screaming Females tonight to put it all together with some of the best rap artists.
Really of a piece.
but I thought it would be an appropriate time to rank the current modern at this moment 5 best artists in hip hop, right?
Okay.
This is not all time, right? You know, we're not talking about like Jay-Z and Eric B and Rakim and Run DMC, people like that.
Yes.
This is at this very moment.
This is the now list.
Yeah, the now list. It's ever evolving, as with Baby Fantasy Genius's lists of top 10 to 15 artists, depending on how many he wants to name, right? It's a living, breathing list that changes from moment to moment, and I might not remember the order.
Yeah.
Right?
Even so, later in the same day.
So, as we do on the Pelton Cast, I figured I would rank them top 5, right? I'm going to do something a little bit differently here.
What's that?
I'm starting at number 1.
Oh.
Instead of counting down, I'm starting at number 1 because he deserves it. And, as I told our mother after going to the show, this is not just the greatest hip-hop artist at the time. This is the greatest artist of this or any other generation, excluding nobody. Right?
Wow, you feel that strongly about Schoolboy Q.
Screaming Females. The number one artist of any genre, of any time, so easily Kanye West. Now, you missed this show, right? Note that you're rolling your eyes. I mean, you would have guessed it on Franklin and Bash. You would agree with this.
It's an insane opinion. No, it's not an insane opinion to have, but it's a ridiculous opinion to have. I did miss Kanye West. I was traveling for work last week, so I was kind of bummed out about that. What was the show like? Tell me a little bit about it, since we have not discussed this at all whatsoever.
Wait, previously. Have we discussed this?
A little bit. You actually had a conversation with someone else who was at the show that I was present for.
You overheard me discussing
yes.
it?
Yes. It was on accident.
Because we haven't been talking. You just happened to be standing next to me. It was a complete coincidence. But
well, we were both accidentally attending the same Chance show.
So I've seen Kanye West quite a few times, right?
You said 9 times?
Somewhere between there. Somewhere between 7 and 9.
Okay.
I think we could probably settle on 8 if it's somewhere between 7 and 9. Because that's the only number in between there, unless we're counting decimals. And I'm pretty sure this was... It's hard to say best, right? Because you have different Kanye shows for different moods. But I feel like this was the most succinct Kanye West show I've ever seen.
Okay.
The seeing Kanye on the Yeezus tour, right? The only one that I can really think could be close is the Graduation tour. He had. You weren't there either. No. In fact, you've never seen Kanye in any of his best shows.
Yes, I've only seen him on the Watch the Throne tour.
That's the only time you've ever previously seen Kanye?
I think
Which
so.
I thought was a good tour. Yeah. I just don't, I'm not going to give Kanye the full credit for that.
It's not a classic Kanye tour.
Yeah. I mean, it was good. And also seeing the song In Paris 8 times, thereabouts.
Not enough.
No, I could have seen it 40 or 50 times.
I thought it really was going to get good around take 22 or so.
So the thing about the show, right, is that it was a big, succinct show. There was a little bit of talking, but not a ton. It didn't feel like a lot of it was unprompted, right? It was quick. It was like an hour and a half. It started mostly on time. And it was kind of Kanye plays new songs plus the hits.
That sounds like, I think, what you'd ideally want from a Kanye show, right?
I mean, that's what a normal person would ideally want from a Kanye show. What I want is Kanye just to play. Like, I could have... So, the Yeezus tour, right? Where it's this, again, like a big planned show, but just such a complete mess, right? Especially the show in
Seattle.
There was
the long monologues, right?
There were not a ton of long monologues. It just felt like he played a lot of songs. He played way too long. I think it was probably 3 hours. People were sick of Kanye at that show. I was the only one who was like, play more.
That's when you yelled, play Freebird.
No, I did not say that.
No. Okay.
But with the deeper Kanye gets into the Kanye catalog, I'm okay with it. But not everybody else is. This was like very succinct Kanye. And I think that this is what we needed at the moment. It's kind of interesting comparing that. It was kind of a dark show, right? It was a succinct Kanye show, but everything was very dark. The crowd was really into it, right? It was almost, dare I say, especially leading into number two on the list, a religious experience.
Oh.
And at number two on the list is Chance the Rapper.
Literally a religious experience for large swaths of it. Which may have been lost on parts of the audience. Including parts that were in front of us.
I feel like Seattle is like... There was a good crowd, right? But Seattle is not the ideal Chance the Rapper market.
No.
People who've never been to any sort of church that is anything like what Chance the Rapper is talking about. But we went to church this last week, right? You go frequently. I went for the first time in 4 years.
Okay.
5 years. At no point when I was at church this last week did I get goosebumps in the same way that I did watching Chance the Rapper perform Sunday Candy. It was like Chance the Rapper talking to us was like the voice of Jesus talking to us, if I could be sacrilegious here. It was like what he's saying I'm listening to and feeling. At some point, he was even like, I know you hear me, but do you feel me?
Yeah.
Father Jerry never said that. At the church that I was at no point was he like, I know you hear the words that I'm saying, but do you feel the words that I'm saying? And I was like, I feel the words that you're saying. He's like, how long has it been since you've talked to him? And I was like, all the time, Chance.
Chance right? converted you,
right?
Is what you're saying, yeah.
The show also, again, so it's like a very dialed-in show. I was thinking about it.
Well, it was an interesting show because of the whole... I don't know, stagecraft of it.
Yeah,
if
I was,
you will.
So the show is predicated around it has like a whole arc, right? Kanye's show has the same sort of thing. It's like a very dialed in show. You know what you're getting going into it. You know he's on the moving stage that's going around.
Yep.
There are various times that people are going to be very hyped up and times that are going to be darker, right? The Chance show, every single second of it is so dialed in because of this weird arc involving the deep voice guy on the coloring book, right? The drunk big fella, that guy, as a puppet lion named Carlos.
Yes.
Which now, every time I listen to those songs, I imagine puppet lion named Carlos singing them, or is talking.
Same here. And then other, a puppet choir.
Yeah.
A puppet female character from Same Drugs.
There's a whole puppet show.
It's basically a musical.
It's amazing to describe this, and it sounds so ridiculous, but to be like, it was earth-shattering.
It seemed kind of ridiculous to me in the moment, I would have to say. As much as I enjoyed the show, it also simultaneously seemed ridiculous.
I can't think of any show that I've been to, almost any experience that I've had for 2 hours of my life, where I didn't look at my phone the whole time.
Yeah.
I was just like watching Chance. It didn't even occur to me to try to take a picture. Right? I'm watching Chance and that's it. I'm so focused and dialed into Chance. But the chorus, I was thinking about this, and it's like, he was like, okay, I want to bring a whole church choir with me on tour. And his people are like, that's going to be really expensive. And he's like, okay, so puppets? We're good with that, right? Puppets? And they're like, sure, great. Yep, that'll work.
Something like that. So I thought it was interesting because when the coloring book first came out, I was not that into it.
You're just wrong. That was just a, we had an argument when it came out. Okay. About K. Tronada versus Chance the Rapper. And nothing about K. Tronada, right? It's a good album. But I said at the time, the album that were that is going to last and persist. Do you remember me saying this?
Not specifically, because we didn't speak to each other.
Oh, yeah. I said it telepathically to you. I said the album that is going to persist and that we're going to keep thinking about and listening to is going to be The Coloring Book.
Well, I mean, obviously,
I dismissed your opinion.
I mean, obviously, that's true because of the fact that Chance is a much bigger star than K. Tronada. And the K. Tronada album, I'm not going to say it doesn't hold up because it does.
Yes.
But within the last week, listening to The Coloring Book in preparation for going to the show, it's really perfectly hit the spot now.
Yeah. I mean, the same thing happened with Kanye, too. Seeing the Life of Pablo songs live, all of a sudden, they hit so much harder. When I'm listening to it in my headphones, it's like, oh, yeah, the beginning of every song, like, yeah, that's coming. Songs that I didn't really like before, I'm like, oh, yeah, Waves, this is a perfect song.
I thought it was interesting to look on Spotify and see what were the most popular coloring book songs, and then like which songs came where in the show, and then contrast it with my own opinions of that album.
Okay.
And they are completely different.
What are the songs that are more popular on the album than are popular in your mind?
Well, I don't know. I mean, just my favorite songs from that album would be Same Drugs, I think, and then All Night.
Same Drugs is one of yours, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, it's no problem in All Night to me. And then Summer Friends.
Which No Problem is far and away the number one most listened to on Spotify from that album.
That's like, that's the hit.
Yeah.
That's the song that you play on Ellen. The other thing that I was thinking about it is like the contrast between those two shows, right? Which Chance is such a joyous show, right?
Yeah.
You're watching Chance and he's so charming, right? You're like, I just want to hang out with Chance the Rapper.
And I was like, I really want Chance to have a good time here and people to be into it.
Yeah, you're like, just, God, Chance, have a good time. Just like us. Yeah, Chance is amazing. I just like everything about him. Any other thoughts on Chance the Rapper?
No, I think we can move on to number three on
okay,
the list.
Number three, right? This is the artist who, like, probably should be number one. Do you know what I'm talking about here? Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Kendrick yeah. Lamar is like...
I thought you were going to use that to apply to... Little boat. I thought it was more ironic than you meant it.
I mean, indisputably, right? Kendrick Lamar is probably the greatest rapper at the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just by having him this low, I'm nervous about being controlled by Kendrick Lamar.
Well, I think it's the fact that it's not as present to you right now.
Yeah. And his most recent album that he put out was something that was kind of cobbled together. It wasn't the same kind of like masterwork that he'd previously done from How to Pimp a Butterfly, Good Kid, Mad City. The Untitled Unmastered is what is most recently in our mind, right? And it's like, okay, this is like a good album. You're still hearing Kendrick Lamar rap. But the most current impression that I have of him is not the perfect music that he's put out for two consecutive albums.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, I can acknowledge Kendrick Lamar is clearly the best rapper there is.
Classic recency bias here. All right, number four.
And also, I didn't see him this last week.
Yeah, it's big demerits to that.
Okay, number four.
He should have thought and scheduled a tour here.
Yeah, the same week. But okay, so here's a thought that I had. At the Schoolboy Q show, who's not ranked in the top five, unfortunately, despite the conceit for this whole, list, the first voice that you hear on the Schoolboy Q album is Kendrick Lamar's voice,
uh-huh.
Right? Like, Kendrick Lamar is still so important to the Schoolboy Q myth. You know, Schoolboy Q is a huge artist on his own and, like, completely merits it on his own. But Kendrick Lamar is still so important to that myth because he is indisputably the best rapper right now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm just negating my whole list. Okay. Just that I didn't see him in the last week. Okay. And number four, have to go with my boy Vince. Vince Staples, right?
Did you watch Vince Staples on Any Given Wednesday last
week?
Did
I? Right, he's getting better too. First time on Any Given Wednesday,
kind of nervous,
a little bit nervous. Yeah. Second time was like, oh yeah, Vince is feeling it.
I enjoyed Bill Simmons like casually referencing watching something in the dressing room with Vince.
With yeah, it's like so. The thing about Vince Staples is we knew that he was a good rapper, right? But over the last year, I think that we've realized that Vince Staples is awesome to hear talk about anything. Any subject, I want to hear Vince Staples talk about it. Plus, also, gets bonus points for eating at the Yellow Church in Ellensburg, Washington.
Yeah, that's valid.
Having a good place to eat in Ellensburg, Washington, if you're Vince Staples, is worth a lot of points on this list.
That's true.
Okay, I changed my number five while we were doing it.
In the process.
In the process. Because, okay, so I'm working on, always working on, top songs of the year list.
Yes.
Right?
And we'll be unveiling that to everyone in December.
Is that when it's happening?
I think so. Okay. That's the end of the year, last I checked.
There are two artists, right, who anytime that they come anywhere near a song, it's basically automatically on the top songs of the year list. Right? Number one is Chance the Rapper, who's been on a lot of stuff this year. Number two, the reason I was as hesitant about it is because he's not really a rapper, but it's Anderson .Paak.
Yeah.
It took you a second, but you were like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
At the moment, Anderson .Paak...
The best song on the aforementioned K. Trinata album.
Yeah, he pulls the whole album together, right?
I don't ever go that far.
Almost any album that Anderson
.Paak... He takes it to another level.
...of somebody else's, he's the best part of that album. And then also is putting out a lot of really good content on his own, right?
And wonderful live.
My original number five, who just got bumped right there, right in the moment, I was going to go with Young Thug / Jeffrey.
Honorable mention.
Honorable mention to... I have a list of honorable mentions here.
Oh.
Yeah. There's a lot of them. Okay, honorable mentions to...
In case they're listening to the podcast, you don't want them to feel left out.
In case one of them is the listener. The City of Chicago.
Oh.
The whole city. That Queen Latifah movie, John C. Reilly. Anyway... The City of Chicago, No Name,
members of the Cubs,
Joey Perp, Saba. It's just like right now, Chicago is the rap city.
It's having a moment.
It's having a moment. Well, I mean, numbers one and two on this list are from Chicago. Big Baby Drum, another artist who is putting out joyous music, right? The Little Boat, as you mentioned. Paperboy, both Paperboy from the show Atlanta. And then also Paperboy, the artist who did the Diddy in like 1992.
Wow. Who would have imagined that he would still be now in 2016? What were the odds?
Yeah, he's the only artist from the 90s who made this list. It's impressive work by Paperboy and the Diddy. And then also Drake.
Yeah.
You know, someday he'll be as good as Paperboy. Either of the Paperboys.
If he works hard and stays out of trouble.
Okay, so that went for like 45 minutes. Should we talk about sports?
We should talk about sports, and we should talk about an interesting development in Seattle sports that occurred earlier this week.
What's that?
That was Chris Hansen writing a letter to the Seattle, I guess it was addressed to the council, and then also, I guess, to the mayor and King County Executive, Dale
Constantine. They already knew about this, right? I like that they have these letters addressed to people. It's like, as if they're like, oh, what's this? Like, they're getting a letter in the mail addressed to me?
It's like how I feel like if you write a column is a quote-unquote open letter, you should only be allowed to do that if you actually send it as a letter to the person it's to. That's my hot take on that one.
What if it's an open letter to a city of people? Do you have to mail it to the entire city?
You could put it in a newspaper as an ad then.
Okay. Like an open letter to white people? How do you do that?
There's a good joke in here somewhere, but I don't know what it is. See, like in the 1990s, you put it at Banana Republic.
Okay. I was going to say on a Friends episode.
There we go. Very, very similar. So anyway, the gist of this letter is that Chris Hansen and his ownership group are no longer asking for public participation in their efforts to build an arena in
By
Soda.
Participation, you mean money.
Yes, that's the euphemism for it. So it was previously going to be $200 million, use the city's bonding capacity, and then repay that out of some of the arena taxes and the lease and things like that. Instead, now they will just put up all the money themselves. And so, why is this important?
Yeah. So what you're telling me to ask you that?
Yes.
You pointed at me and said, "Why is?" But so, why is this important? No. What does this mean, though?
Okay, so I think there's a few things.
I honestly don't know. I've been waiting to ask you this because I have no idea.
I think there's a few things that are important here. Now, first off, I think contingent on the fact that the city council probably didn't just find out about this through the letter.
Yeah.
I think it is likely that they, when they re-vote on the decision to approve the vacation of,
when is that going
to
happen?
Of Occidental, the alley that they would have to build over to build this arena. I'm not sure what the timetable is.
They're
going to
vacate Paseo, though.
They are going to vacate Paseo. It's but not immediately. It's not okay. It's not going to happen tomorrow.
We've got time.
Yeah, this was very interesting because I happened to share this news with you while we were coming back from the Chance concert, literally standing on the property where the arena yeah, is going
that,
to be.
We hardly knew that Paseo.
I mean, I have been there three times or four times already, so okay. I've known it quite a bit. So number one, that will set up the street vacation in all likelihood. Number two, the previous deal, the memorandum of understanding between Chris Hansen and the city and the council, was set to expire in October 2017. And there were ways that they could have extended it, things like that. But now you don't have to worry about that date whatsoever.
Okay.
It is completely irrelevant. There's no deal with the city or council other than, you know, some agreements as far as tax breaks and things like that, which combined with the street vacation, if that's approved, means at any point they feel like it, they can start building an arena.
Really?
And so that brings me to point three,
okay,
which is that the memorandum of understanding was set up specifically for a scenario where they got an NBA team and then maybe an NHL team.
Yeah.
Building it themselves gives them the option to build for just an NHL team.
Okay.
Which, again, was something that maybe could have been negotiated with the city and county, but now you don't even have to worry about that.
So they can just start building.
Yeah, I mean, there's still maybe some environmental issues to work through to get finalized, but it's close to shovel ready once the vacation is approved. And that's a huge step. So then basically all what you need to find is an NHL owner willing to either get an expansion team here or move a team. They are not interested in owning an NHL team.
That's kind of amazing to me that they're willing, like the lengths that they're willing to go to build this arena, but just being so unwilling to own an NHL team.
I mean, at some point, the amount of money you're laying out gets unpalatable.
Yeah.
When you're building an arena, buying an NHL team, and buying an NBA team at some point in the future.
Yeah.
That gets to be a lot of money.
Okay.
And then also, it's just not a passion for Chris Hansen. His interest is in
He's always
NBA.
Wearing that Sonics jacket every single time I see him.
Yeah.
I never see him wear like an NHL jacket with just the logo on the back.
No, it'd be...
All the different teams
no,
on
No, it'd
the
be
sleeve.
The Seattle Metropolitans.
Okay.
Because note in the letter, they talked about bringing the NBA and NHL back to Seattle.
Nice. There you go.
It was just, a great touch.
Just like the podcast coming back.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
but the Sonics, if the Sonics came back, that would beat our comeback.
It would.
I'm willing to call us number two after that.
The NHL hiatus has been approximately a century now.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the exact date was. I think we won the Stanley Cup in 1917.
Okay.
That sound right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Okay.
Yeah, if I can go back in my knowledge of... it was actually called the NHL?
No, I think it was a forerunner to the NHL at that point.
Okay.
If I recall correctly.
Yeah.
Again, we're not going to look any of this up. It's
yeah.
We're doing it on the fly. So,
okay, yeah, I want to hear about this, and I have a follow-up question.
I guess that was pretty much all I had. I mean, the NHL clearly is very interested in coming in to Seattle if they can find an owner willing to front the money.
What are you hearing basketball-wise?
Nothing.
Nothing.
And not nothing like it's the good nothing, like, no. Like, there's not any discussion of expansion from everything I have heard. The league has been focused on getting the CBA done, which should happen very shortly before this December 15th deadline to opt out.
And the TV deal is done?
TV deal is kicking in now. It has already
begun. Oh, yeah, that's why all the players got paid this summer.
Yes.
Okay.
So maybe that sets up the opportunity for them to start discussing the expansion. Still, it sounds like a lot of owners aren't interested in it. Basically, the way I think you need to think about expansion is it's the owners taking out a reverse mortgage on their franchises.
Yes.
Because the value of their franchises is sky high right now because of this enormous TV revenue that's coming in. And if you expand by one or two teams, you're dividing that pot that much more.
Yeah.
So the only reason that you would do it and why I think it is possible that it could happen at some point in the future is, let's say you're a small market team.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, for example, you're the Utah Jazz.
Okay.
So the cap, you're getting a lot more national TV money, but you're having to plow that all back into salary because of the fact that the salary cap is so much higher.
Yes.
So for someone like the Lakers, they're making a lot more money even though the salary cap is higher because they've also got this enormous local TV deal. The Jazz don't. the Jazz aren't making any more money off their, you know, home games other than the fact that they'll probably be better this season. So they're maybe even losing a little money on the new national TV deal as opposed to raking it in. I mean, it helps eventually, I think, in terms of revenue sharing. But basically, you've got a situation where some of these owners in the small markets are asset rich because they have this really valuable NBA team, but poor cash flow, poor.
Interesting.
And so that's where you might be willing to sacrifice some of the asset value to get the expansion fee now. You know, if it's $1 billion for an expansion fee, then that ends up being more than $30 million per team.
Okay.
Which is a lot of money.
Okay.
I don't know if you needed to explain that to you. $30 million, a lot of money.
I mean, there has to have been conversations between Chris Hansen and Adam Silver. There's no way there's not a dialogue there.
I think there's an ongoing dialogue there, but I don't think there's any scenario
there's no
where...
promise of any
no,
kind.
No,
you keep saying, I'm always like, how big is the news that's coming, right? Because you told us about this news slightly before it's happening. And I was like, what? How big are we talking here, right? But I guess I shouldn't expect that the news would be like there's a team before the arena is even done.
Definitely.
Yeah, that would be insane.
I think that's what I told you, is it's not expansion big or not a team big.
Yes. I mean, that's the biggest news.
So this
I
is
suppose a team sale would be big news also, a team being sold to Chris Hansen.
Yeah, I mean, this is a necessary step, but there's still a really big necessary step, a couple of really big necessary steps between NBA coming back to Seattle and here.
Yeah. How profitable does Chris Hansen think that this team is going to be?
That's a good question.
Like, are these tickets going to be $1,000 a ticket?
I mean, certainly there's a lot more capacity for high-end tickets in the city of Seattle than there was in 2008 when the Sonics left, when you look at the explosion of Amazon.
Maybe they should have considered that before having the team move, that you would be in like the fastest-growing market in the entire country.
You know, I don't think the ownership group at that point was really considering the financial element of it.
I don't think that... Clearly David Stern wasn't. But anyway...
When with David Stern, it was just, I think it was no longer business. It was very much personal at that point.
Okay.
With David Stern. So, I mean, that's an element of it. But I think the real play for them is more in the regional sports network.
Yes.
And that's why I think they really wanted to get it done in 2013 with the Kings, because that would have been an ideal time to do it. You know, the longer you wait, the more you run the chance that this regional sports explosion does prove a bubble and explodes, but that hasn't happened yet.
Wouldn't they own the regional sports network themselves, though?
I mean, you'd presumably partner with someone like Comcast on it.
Okay. Okay. It's good news, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Okay, we're feeling good.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So much better than before.
I had somebody ask me, they texted me this week, and were like, what should I make of this? And I'm like, I'm going to ask Kevin that later.
Yeah.
Another thing about the podcast is I call you Al. That's if you hear the name Al or Kevin, they're interchangeable.
Naturally, it dates back to the song "You Can Call Me Al."
Yes. Okay, so we're feeling good about this.
We are.
Another thing we're feeling good about is the NBA season has started, and what has come upon us is my favorite segment of the entire year.
Yes, a Pelton Cast tradition unlike any other, where I give you 10 players to watch, and then therefore, indirectly, the listeners, 10 players to watch over the course of the season who are obscure, usually rookies, typically European players.
Hopefully people whose names I can't pronounce. This is the segment that brought to you Nurkic, and Jokic, and Huertas, and Porzingis, right?
And Capella?
No, that doesn't sound right.
Oh. No, keep us on last year's list. Also on last year's list, two players who have subsequently been waived.
So this is a list that hypothetically this is a list for the original conceit was that I don't pay that much attention to basketball. Since then I've actually started paying a lot more attention to basketball. But this was the original conceit, and that I would pay attention to these players and we'd come back to them at various times. What it's ended up being is you naming hipster European rookies.
Yes.
But I love that. That's my favorite thing. I would have known nothing about Huertas last year if it weren't for this list. And as it was, I was impressing all of my friends with my Huertas knowledge.
That's the goal of this list.
And at various times, you may say that you love Robert Covington. Is that the dude's name?
Yes. Yes,
so
it
just
is.
Try not to fall in love with any of these players.
I don't know if there's any of these guys I'm in love with.
Okay.
It's just an infatuation in most. All right.
Who do we have first?
This year's list. First up a 27-year-old rookie.
Oh, here we
who
go.
Who has been toiling overseas. Malcolm Delaney. Okay. Out of Virginia Tech, I believe.
Never heard of this.
And he is the Atlanta Hawks backup point guard this season.
Malcolm Delaney?
Malcolm Delaney.
Is there anything we should know about him?
His projections are pretty good. Strong translations. So, and he'll get a chance to play. They waived Jarrett Jack, who was going to be his competition for minutes as backup point guard. People thought Jack was going to play because people have heard of Jarrett Jack. But it turns out that he is coming off a torn
ACL. People definitely have not heard of Malcolm Delaney. I'm pretty sure you made him up.
And I did not.
Okay.
It would be good one year if I tried to slip in a fake player.
You definitely, if Malcolm Delaney is the first one, you definitely could make somebody up.
All right, number two. In the grand tradition of Nuggets foreign draft picks.
Here we go.
Following in the footsteps of Jokic and Nurkic. This is not an itch, sadly. Juancho Hernan Gomez.
Oh, Hernan Gomez. There's two Hernan Gomez.
There
are they
two,
both on your list?
I only went with one Hernan Gomez.
Okay.
Because A, I wanted to only do one player per team, and there's a better Knicks player. And B, then I figured I could bring him up in this
Is
segment.
Your Knicks player Derek Rose?
Yes. So Juancho is a stretch four. The Hernan Gomez's are Spanish. They both played on the national team in the Olympics this summer. His brother is Guillermo, but he goes by Willie.
Okay.
And he plays for the Knicks, as I alluded to. And it should be in the rotation. He'll actually play more, it seems like, than Juancho, who I think played 1 minute in his NBA debut tonight.
Okay.
But he's got a good future.
But if I understand anything about Nuggets foreign players, he's going to be amazing.
You know what the other thing these guys all have in common?
What?
They all were great in my projection system.
Were they?
Yeah.
Man. Do the Nuggets have access to your projection system?
Well, they have ESPN Insider, I'm pretty sure.
Not everyone. I don't. I don't have access to this projection system.
Their international scout does have a tendency to favorite a lot of my tweets.
Interesting. So you're taking, on the record, you're taking credit for Nurkic, Jokic. I called you over the summer when it was whatever team. Was it Nurkic or... I honestly do not know the difference between those two players.
Jokic is the one that played really well against the U.S., if that's what you're
asking.
I called
to congratulate you on the Jokic coming out
and
game.
I accepted that.
Because you clearly influenced his draft being drafted.
All right, moving along. From the Golden State Warriors, second round pick this year out of UNLV, Patrick McCaw.
Okay, I've heard of this person.
Yeah, he's maybe one of the most notable guys on this list.
That's amazing that Patrick McCaw is one of the most notable guys on this
because
list.
He plays for the Warriors and he had a really good preseason
like,
and people
he's
got
like
excited about
the
it.
The guy in hipster NBA circles.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's like really long and skinny and shoots threes and can make plays off the dribble. He's going to be great. He's the new Andre Iguodala.
Really?
He's not going to be that good. I mean, that's,
Have I heard
that's
of
obviously
this person?
Ridiculous.
He went to UNLV?
He did.
And I've never heard of him?
Probably not in college. I mean, UNLV was terrible last year. They didn't make the NCAA tournament and their coach got fired.
Okay.
So you probably didn't see a lot of him. Okay. But he was really good in Maui.
Okay.
All right. Next up on the list, the oldest player on this list, I believe, probably by a wide margin. Someone who has previously played in the NBA, but is back after like a 4 or 5 year absence.
Just like us. I mean, not that we previously played in the NBA, but he's back.
Bobby Brown.
Bobby Brown?
Bobby Brown out of Cal State Fullerton, like a high scoring point guard who's been in China lately and won the backup point guard job with the Rockets. Or yeah, not backup, he's Tyler Ennis is playing ahead of him, but beat out Pablo Prigioni and then sadly Gary Payton II beat those guys out for a roster spot.
Wait, Gary Payton II's not in the NBA?
He is not in the NBA.
Was he drafted?
No, but they gave him a guaranteed contract and then they still cut him.
What team is he on?
He was on Houston.
Oh, I've already forgotten what team this player is.
Of course you have.
I've forgotten his name, and all I heard, his name is Bobby Brown. I feel like I should be able to remember that.
Yeah, that's not too complicated. All right, next on the list, a player you may remember because he was with the Blazers for an extended period of time.
We'll see.
And as Damian Lillard's best buddy, but the Blazers cut him midway through last season, and it turned out to be a mistake on their part because he went to the New Orleans Pelicans.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know who you think that I'm talking about then. And now is their starting point guard and had a double-double in tonight's season opener. Tim Frazier.
Oh, I looked at their box score and was like, somebody named T. Frazier.
Standout in the D-League who had really good numbers with the Pelicans at the end of last year. So I'm all in on the Tim Frazier bandwagon.
Are you? Who's that guy who the Blazers had who now is like a superstar on the Nuggets, I think?
Will Barton?
Yeah, Thrill Barton.
Yeah. I think Tim Frazier is better than Will Barton.
Whoa!
Hot take. Hot take.
Oh, there we go.
That's the kind of insight you're only getting here on the podcast. All right, next on the list.
Tim Frazier is better than Will Barton.
The actual Knicks representative, because they have two international rookies this year. I went instead with Mindaugas Kuzminskas.
Okay.
Who is, I think he's Latvian.
Okay.
He is a combo forward who's got like this really funky game, shoots a lot of hook shots, can shoot the three. He's a very savvy player.
Phil Jackson was like, Porzingis worked. Let's try to do that again. Yeah.
And he's actually going to play a lot. Like, he played a fair amount on opening night because they have no depth whatsoever.
Yeah, what is this person's name?
Mindaugas Kuzminskas.
Okay.
It'll be him and Justin Holiday out there for the Knicks when they've got the second unit in.
Oh, look at that.
All right, next on the list, another Spanish rookie from the Oklahoma City Thunder, Alejandro Abrines, who's a really good outside shooter. They drafted him in the second round a few years ago, and he's developed into a quality player, and now will get some regular minutes for them, could grow into a large role if he plays well.
They still have that Houston guy?
They do.
Okay, good.
He's not on the list. All right, next up. Maybe the least likely player on this list to actually play this year, but worth watching anytime he does play, possibly for comedic value. The Sacramento Kings lottery pick, Georgios Papayannis.
Oh, I kind of remember this name. They drafted him in the lottery?
Yeah, he was like supposed to be a second round pick going into the draft. And he went to Summer League and he was out of shape and he was awful at Summer League. He actually was somewhat decent when I saw him this year during the preseason. But he's also behind like five other centers on their roster, so he might not play. Yeah,
Georgios Papayannis,
kind of a plotting center, and he his signature moves. He likes to back guys down for like 10 seconds at a time, which is technically illegal in the NBA. And he finally got called for that during Summer League, which is the first time it had ever been called in Summer League, for sure.
Great. Wait, this is the person. Okay, I want to talk about Husky rookies in a second.
Yes.
Which I'm gonna
They traded Marquise Chris for him.
They traded Marquise Chris for this person who likes to back people down for 10 seconds at a time. Interesting. I'm gonna count Gary Payton Jr. as a Husky rookie also. Honorary.
First off, it's Gary Payton the second.
Sorry, Gary Payton.
Gotta get that straight because there's also a Gary Payton Jr. He is not a basketball star.
Okay.
Next on the list, a player who started this evening and is gonna start at the beginning of the year with Jared Solinger out, Pascal Siakam from the Toronto Raptors.
They had a nice win today, right?
They did, over Detroit.
And this person started?
He did.
Pascal Siakam?
Yeah. So they've got this thing where they can't start Patrick Patterson, who's actually their best power forward. Like, for whatever reason.
Okay, why? You make it seem like they have, like, a level of difficulty set to the not start Patrick Patterson.
No, it's like he's uncomfortable as a starter. So they will, until the playoffs, they will not start him. Last year, they started Luis Scola over him the entire year, even though Patterson is clearly better than Scola on every level. And so this year now, because Solinger's injured, Siakam is stepping in. But he's actually played really quite well.
Well, maybe this not being able to start Patrick Patterson thing is brilliant.
All right, and then last on the list.
Finally. This is the last person. This is the last opportunity for you to love anybody.
Yeah. I don't know if I love Tomas Sadaransky, a former Wizards second-round pick who they drafted just ahead of Jay Crowder and Draymond Green. But they brought him over this year, and he actually could be useful for them as like a backup combo guard, except that for some reason he's inexplicably out of the rotation to start the season.
Well, great.
So there you go.
Okay, so a couple more questions about the NBA here.
All right.
Right? Because I want this podcast to last for 2 or 3 hours.
We're really giving people a taste of what it's going to be like on a weekly basis.
There might be some people who don't care about Seattle sports. So if you don't care about Seattle sports, it very soon will be the time to turn off the podcast.
That's true.
Thanks for listening. But let's start with Marquise Chris and DeJounte Murray.
So Marquise Chris is going to play quite a bit for Phoenix. He's, I guess, their second big man off the bench because Alex Len is still playing probably the lead role there. But
didn't they had draft two very similar big men?
So they drafted Dragan Bender
with the
number three pick or the number four pick in the draft. And then they traded for Chris, who they considered at number four. They traded to get him later in the lottery. But Chris is ahead of Bender in his development right now, so he'll play more. Bender had actually a really nice debut tonight, but they're also playing him at small forward right now and playing Chris at power forward and then even a little at center. And so I think he averaged like 14-8 in the preseason.
I like Marcus Chris at center.
Was one of the most productive, was probably the most productive rookie in the preseason.
Really?
But probably not going to play quite that much in the regular season.
How do your projections, are your projections good for Chris?
They're meh. They're not great, but they're definitely not terrible.
Okay. So I was a little bit nervous because I felt like I'd seen some highlights during preseason of some amazing Chris dunks, but that was it. Although I guess what else am I going to see during preseason?
Yeah. It'd be weird if you were seeing him box out, but he's actually rebounded pretty well, okay, which was an issue for him.
Wasn't he terrible at rebounding last year?
He was. It turns out
thrilling blocks, amazing dunks, not a lot of rebounds.
It turns out that's because he was constantly switched onto guards on the perimeter. That's why he was bad at rebounding.
Can't wait for Husky season. And then DeJounte.
So I don't think he's going to play very much as a rookie. I expect him to spend a lot of time at the Spurs D-League affiliate in Austin.
Is that where he is right now?
Not right now, because the D-League season hasn't actually started yet.
Austin Toros?
They used to be the Toros. They then renamed them the Spurs at some point.
What? That's confusing.
Especially when you see, like, Warriors Spurs on the bottom line on NBA TV, and it turns out it's Santa Cruz Warriors and Austin Spurs. But not as confusing as last night's actual Warriors Spurs score.
I listened to your whole podcast with Bill Barnwell today.
Did you?
Yeah, I listened to the whole thing waiting for any potential mention of the Pelton cast.
Which finally
it
came.
It was a pretty good podcast. Congrats.
That's a rare compliment for one of my other podcasts.
Yeah. That's why I thought we'd really oversaturate the market by having you on consecutive days of podcasts.
Yes.
But, and talking about basketball. But you at no point mentioned Tomas.
No, he did not come up. Like, you got to know your market. That was not the Tomas Satoransky podcast.
You should have just gone into that. Like, no matter what question Bill Barnwell asked, you'd be like, and let me tell you my top 10 players to watch for this year. And just started talking about Tomas. Wait, what is his last name?
Satoransky.
He was like, do you know about Bialik for the Raptors? not even close.
No.
Okay. Why okay, not? So last year, you made some bold predictions about the NBA season, right?
It was who is going to lead the league in fouls?
You made the bold prediction that Emmanuel Mudiay would lead the league in turnovers by a wide margin.
Which he didn't.
I think James Harden ended up late.
He was on a terrific pace early in the year, but he tailed off.
You're just so confident. Statistically, after looking at everything statistically for the year, is there anything that stands out about this particular season?
Not in the same way of like some obscure thing. I mean, James Harden had 17 assists tonight, and the possibility that Harden leads the league in scoring and assists and joins Tony Archibald is the only two people to ever do that. That's pretty interesting.
Okay. Are there anything else about this NBA season? Do you want to talk Portland for a second?
Yeah, for a second. I mean, Portland, I have them, you know, kind of in the mix with Oklahoma City, Houston, and Utah for 4th through 7th in the West.
Okay.
And I would say of those four teams, they were the most impressive probably in their opening game. I mean, Utah, all things considered, played pretty well in Portland because they were without their two best players, Gordon Hayward and Derek Favors, and then still led in the fourth quarter. So I think they're going to be fine. But, you know, if you think that Portland is the best of those teams, nothing to dissuade you from that opinion so far.
What do you make of Damian Lillard's MVP candidacy?
I think it's a stretch, but...
you were so angry about this earlier.
I mean, he wasn't even an all-star last year.
Yeah, that was crazy. He should have been an all-star.
He should have been. But he was, like, the last guy in the roster anyway.
All right, fine. Fine.
So there's a long jump from that to MVP, let's be clear.
And then are there any outliers... team-wise that you feel like are being, I'm just like throwing random things at you, that you feel like are not being judged accurately by the general public?
I mean, Utah, a lot of people don't understand how good they're going
always
to be.
Always talking about Utah. God, I knew it'd be Utah.
You want me to talk about Denver and all their European guys?
Yeah, let's hear more about that.
Because the projections that I do using the real plus minus from ESPN, they have the Nuggets at 42 wins.
Really?
And 8th in the West.
Really?
Yeah.
Is Mudiay good now?
No, but he's less bad.
Okay.
And it's interesting.
Reason,
so they're starting
really cheering for Emmanuel Mudiay.
They're starting Jokic because to spite me. They're starting Jokic and Nurkic together now.
You got to start Jokic and Nurkic.
And it seems to be working really well for Nurkic. He had like 23 points and I think like 13 rebounds tonight. Jokic seems to be kind of marginalized because now he's got to play out on the perimeter exclusively.
Jokic is kind of pissed about it.
Yeah. Because I think Jokic is better, all things considered.
Interesting. Well, we'll continue monitoring these players and see if they're released or how much time they're spending with the Austin Spurs.
Yep.
I guess there's nobody on your list who... No, there was a Spurs player, right?
No, there was not.
Hmm. But we'll come back to these players somewhere around, like, Christmas.
Yeah.
Right?
That seems like a good time.
About right. Right? We'll talk about the NBA occasionally. I feel like it's not... It's more in the background of what we do. Not having a team here, we don't talk too much. The Blazers, I would say, are the official basketball team. You see a lot of the Blazers. I care a lot more about the food in Portland. That's what I want to hear about. Various donut places, pastries, Thai food. That's what I'm looking to hear about.
We don't have time for that today.
Okay.
Because we're already almost an hour in, and we haven't talked about Seattle sports at all yet.
Are we really almost an hour in? All right, let's talk about the Sounders.
So the Sounders are in the playoffs. They clinched a playoff spot and, in fact, moved up to fourth in the Western Conference by beating Sporting Kansas City 2-1 on beating Real Salt Lake 2-1 on Sunday on Decision Day, where they had all the games kick off at the same time to produce maximum excitement.
Yeah, so much excitement.
And so what that means is...
Especially going against an NFL day.
Yes, like not ideal. What that means is the Sounders will host the one-game playoff in the elimination round of the MLS playoffs Thursday night, tonight, if you're listening to this when it comes out, against Sporting Kansas City.
Pretty amazing that we're even at this point, right?
Yeah, given where this is. So, intriguingly...
What I mean is I can't believe that the MLS season is finally over. That the MLS regular season has actually ended.
So then the deer for the Sounders, the low point right before Ziggy Schmidt got fired, was a desultory loss. I forget what the final was, but at Sporting Kansas City, where the Sounders not only didn't score, like I don't think they even looked at the goal in that game.
I do remember they didn't have a shot on goal.
It was
right?
So bad.
You only use the word desultory when talking about soccer.
I occasionally use it in basketball.
Okay,
but it's got to be something really bad to merit a desultory. And this was, because then they fired Ziggy Schmidt and they signed Nicola Ladero, and the season completely turned around despite eventually losing Clint Dempsey. So the Sounders go in here having won, I think, 5 of their last 7 matches at this point going into the playoffs.
And you have to think, right now, probably the one team that nobody wants to play in the playoffs, right? I'm not going to say that the Sounders are necessarily the favorites, right?
They're definitely not the favorites.
But if there's any team that is going to be scary farther down, it's definitely the Sounders.
Yeah, I mean, when the climb that they made through the Western Conference standings from, I think, being in last place at that point at the All-Star break to fourth,
wow,
was pretty impressive.
And just 8 months ago at the All-Star break.
Yes. So Sporting Kansas City won both matchups against the Sounders head-to-head this season, both home and away. But again, didn't face the Sounders with Lodero. It was a completely different team, basically, at that point. Some players to watch for Sporting Kansas City. Their forward, Dom Dwyer,
yeah,
who before this season have been better known as the husband of U.S. women's national teamer Sidney LaRue.
Oh, I thought he was on Entourage.
That was a different Dom. But broke through this season with a team-high 16 goals, good for 5th in MLS, scored in that game against the Sounders, and I swear it feels like he always scores against the Sounders.
Okay.
I looked it up, and it turns out it's not true, but it really feels like he always scores against us. Benny Failhaber in the midfield is kind of the creative playmaking force for this team.
And plays on the national team.
Yeah, he's had some experience with it, had some call-ups. He had 13 assists, tied for 3rd in the league. Then they also have in midfield Graham Zusi from the national team. He had kind of a quiet season, 2 goals, 4 assists. And then the other national teamer on Sporting Kansas City is defender Matt Beisler, and he actually got benched.
Really?
So I'm not sure if he's playing at this point, but he's kind of on the outs there.
Really?
Yeah.
Beisler got benched. I've never liked him anyway. On the national team. It just feels going into this one good, right? This one game playoff?
Yeah, I mean, anything can happen in one soccer game, but the Sounders are pretty well positioned.
Who do they play if they win?
Well, it depends. You reseed after this round, so it depends what happens in the 3-6 matchup.
Okay. The Galaxy won earlier today, right?
Oh, okay. They already won?
Was that 3-6? They're 3, right?
Yes.
So if the Sounders win, who do they then play?
All right. Now I'd have to look at the... I had that all prepared.
But they would be playing the top seed.
I know that off the top of my head. It would be a rematch against FC Dallas,
who
they played in the semifinals last
year. FC Dallas.
But FC Dallas, is their attacking playmaking force was injured late in the season.
Really?
In their game, they beat the Sounders 2-1.
Really?
A couple weeks ago. So they're not maybe not the same team going into the playoffs.
It would be nice to get some revenge against FC Dallas, right?
It would, and that was a really close series last year.
It was a close series, and it was the series where you could tell that the Sounders...
It was time to change.
Yeah, the run was really ending. They kind of carried it through to the next year. I mean, they lost to Martins over the summer, but it was like, this team is so much younger and faster than the Sounders are. And now, when you have somebody like Ladero playing, who looks to me, I mean, I don't watch a ton of MLS. Ladero looks to me like maybe the best player in the MLS.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but he's up there. I mean, and then Osvaldo Alonso has been rejuvenated. There was some talk of him for MVP for a while there.
Really?
Christian Roldan coming into the side on a regular basis.
Yeah, the youth with Roldan and Jordan Moore is playing so well.
Jovan Jones.
The team looks completely different than they do. It'd be nice to get some revenge on FC Dallas.
Yeah.
So, let's just try to win this game first, though.
So, yeah, like I said, anything can happen in one game. The Sounders, I think, are solid favorites, but not overwhelming ones.
What is the percentage chance of victory?
So ESPN Soccer Power Index
gives
them...
I'm not going to do my own.
It gives them a 65% chance of victory, and that seems reasonable.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Two-thirds, somewhere in there.
Seems great.
So we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I've been scouting Sporting Kansas City all week, right?
I mean, what do you think about their tactics going lately to a 4-3-3 and...
4-3-3? Jeez. That seems like a very normal tactic to go with. Did they recently go to a 4? What were they doing before?
I don't know that they
then?
Actually recently went just... I just know that they play a 4-3.
Okay. Any other thoughts on the Sounders?
No, I think that pretty much covers it for now.
We'll revisit this next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, hopefully we'll be able to revisit an upcoming playoff series. Actually, I think they would play the first game this weekend, so they'd be in between the two legs if they do advance.
Speaking of this weekend. So we missed the Husky game last weekend, most of it. Participating in a funeral, got to see some of it, but didn't really get a good sense of the game against Oregon
State. I feel
like
I got a pretty good sense of it.
And the sense was, not really that much happened. The Huskies kind of just won easily.
Yeah, I mean, it was an underwhelming second half, and I think Coach Pete was able to kind of call the team out on that and
teachable moment.
Yeah, yeah, great teachable moment.
He was really happy about them not playing that well in a game that they still dominated.
I also think that the 37-point spread on this game was pretty ridiculous because even though Oregon State had been really bad offensively, like they lost by 5 to Utah the week before.
Yes.
Obviously, that was before their top two quarterbacks were injured in that game.
Yeah.
That happened later in the game. But... still, the spread was out of hand. So I don't think it was a bad performance.
From this last game, and we'll talk about this going into the Utah game this weekend, does the pass rush without Joe Mathis, who almost certainly will not be playing at Utah,
yeah,
does the pass rush without Joe Mathis, just one sack this last week, right, does it make you a little bit scared? Huskies have been... very blessed injury-wise, if I can do a giant knock on wood, right? You look at most teams, the injuries are stacking up at this point, and the Huskies have almost none, right?
Yeah.
But their leading pass rusher, their sacks leader, and Joe Mathis, not being out there, just getting one sack against Oregon State, feels like maybe that might be a difference.
It's definitely a concern.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't know what else to tell you
besides
that.
We'll just note our concern. But let's talk about Utah.
Let's talk about Utah.
So, this last week, Utah, I think, they're such a hard team for me to wrap my head around, right? Because statistically, they're not as good as their record would indicate, right?
Yes, they've had a number of close wins.
And I think that that's bearing out where you see a lot of one-loss teams ranked much higher than them. Utah's number 17 in the polls, right?
It sounds right.
So there are a lot of one-loss teams who are much higher than them, and I think it's partially because people are realizing that statistically, if you look at ESPN FPI, there are three teams coming up on the Husky schedule who are rated higher than Utah, right?
Yeah.
So you go into this game and you think about that, but then you look at the record and it seems a little bit scary, right?
And then also the fact that I think last weekend... And FPI indicates this, that was their best victory going into UCLA and winning 52-45. I mean, maybe not because of the fact that Josh Rosen is out and UCLA isn't the same.
Yeah, they're playing Fawful.
with their backup quarterback in there, but scored 52 points on the UCLA defense still is a fairly impressive accomplishment. And the guy who was doing most of it was Joe Williams, who was retired a few weeks ago.
He quit football.
He did.
Right?
Quit the team.
All of Utah's running backs got hurt.
Yes.
And then they begged him to come back.
Dennis Erickson, the running back coach there, begged him to come back.
Dennis Erickson's their running back coach?
He's their running back coach.
Really?
Yeah.
Look at that.
And so since he came back, he returned 2 weeks ago for their Oregon State game and then played also against UCLA. 511 yards, 8.1 yards per carry.
My God.
He was the best player in the country last weekend
and
against UCLA.
One of the greatest running performances that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
331 yards. You look at the game log and it's like 64-yard run, 74-yard touchdown run. These huge touchdown runs. I mean, that's how you get to 331 yards on 29 carries.
So despite only playing four games and really only playing heavily the last two games, he's already fourth in the conference in rushing yards on the season.
My God. So does Utah have anything else?
Not really offensively. So they're overall ranked 60th in FPI offensively. And you know, the UW offense versus the Utah defense, I mean, that projects as a strength and advantage on paper for UW, but it's really the Utah offense versus the UW defense where this game should be won for the Huskies if they're going to win it.
Yeah, and so it starts with Troy Williams, the former Husky, right?
Yeah, the transfer who left UW after he felt that he wasn't getting a chance to play here, and that turned out to be correct.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Troy Williams versus Jake Browning. Jake Browning's Heisman season.
We're starting that now?
Yeah, that's what we're calling it. Do you remember like 2 or 3 years ago we called it
Richard Sherman's defensive player of the year
didn't
season?
Win the defensive. We won the Super Bowl though, so
you got that going for you, which is nice. So he spent a year at junior college, then transferred to Utah, won the starting job this year in fall camp, and you know, he's been okay. His completion percentage is 12th out of 14.
It's so hard for me
qualifying
to
quarterbacks.
Look at a quarterback, and you look at Troy Williams with a 56% completion percentage, with 7 touchdowns to 5 interceptions, who's not even that good at running the ball. He's had a couple of good running performances, but he's not somebody like, what's the dude's name from Arizona?
Brandon Dawkins.
Yeah, he's not somebody like Brandon Dawkins, who the Huskies couldn't tackle, right?
Yes.
He doesn't present that kind of running skill set.
I mean, he has run for 5 touchdowns. So around the goal line, he's become a pretty good threat.
Okay.
He's only got 145 yards overall. Obviously, in college, that includes your sacks. So that probably understates it a little bit. But yes, he's not, you know, someone who's a constant threat to tuck it and run.
And it makes me think, if we can shut down Joe Williams, and the goal all for the entire defense will be force Troy Williams to pass.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to want 8 in the box, I think, in this game. You're going to be walking JoJo McIntosh into the box on a regular basis.
And if Troy Williams is passing, I just don't know what Utah can do.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see a little bit about the health of Tim Patrick, who's their leading receiver, a senior. He's got 5 of their 7 touchdowns this season and leads them with 429 receiving yards, despite the fact that he's kind of been limited by injuries the last few games. He's played, but just hasn't been, you know, at full strength.
Okay.
So he's one guy that could present a threat. Beyond that, yeah, it's a little hard. They just don't have the depth of playmakers, I think, that you would look at in an elite offensive team.
Do they even have a backup running back?
Yeah, because one of the running backs returned last week.
Okay.
Who was injured. Zach Moss returned last week. And then Troy McCormick has been practicing, could play against the Huskies. The third running back who was injured, Armon Shine, is out for the season.
Okay. So you look at Utah. Good running team. Not a great passing team, right?
Yes.
Pretty rough accuracy. And then you look at the UW defense ranked, where they ranked overall, like top 10 overall.
Yeah, 9th in the country.
That doesn't seem like a good formula for Utah.
It doesn't, but nor did the Arizona formula seem like a good formula.
What about, I mean, yes. We couldn't stop Brandon Dawkins. It's the only thing that they had going for them.
I mean, they did also run quite a bit before their starting running back broke his ankle in that game. Or excuse me, their backup running back who was playing because their starting running back was already injured.
Man, it makes you think we might have lost that game if he hadn't gotten injured.
Could have happened.
Let's not think
Utah about is very good at special teams.
Really?
They are. Their punter, Mitch Wisnowski, is number 2 in the country in yards per punt.
So if it becomes a game of field position, this could be important.
They actually are the rare team that the Huskies have a special teams disadvantage against. They're 10th in FPI to UW's 15th.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. But what about UW's offense against the Utah defense?
So what Utah's defense has done is create a lot of turnovers. They lead the country in forcing turnovers, lead the country in interceptions.
Okay.
They've also held opposing quarterbacks to just 53.5% completion percentage, so even lower than their own quarterbacks. But the good news is they're allowing 12.6 yards per completion when opponents do complete passes, and that ranks 10th in the Pac-12 out of 12 teams. The Huskies are number one in that category at 9.5 yards allowed per completion. So that seems to line up well with what the what the Huskies have been doing well this season in terms of throwing the deep ball to John Ross.
We'll get there on the throwing the deep ball with the Seahawks.
Yes, we will. John Ross, Dante Pettis, maybe Chico McClatcher, we'll see.
Getting the ball down the field, yes. Right? Is this a scheme thing? Does Utah blitz a lot and leave their corners one-on-one, or people are just hitting deep balls against them?
You know, it seems like it's execution coverage breakdowns and kind of reading a little bit about what's going on. And yeah, it's definitely something they're concerned about, not happy about.
I'd be concerned about that too.
Well, despite the fact that their defense isn't bad overall, but this is kind of the weak link of their defense.
And there's no obvious place to stop. I mean, talking at the Seahawks, right? It's like there are places to stop the Seahawks offense at this point. The Husky offense, there really isn't any notable weakness. If you have one place that we can exploit, it seems like the Huskies should be able to do that.
Yep.
And
against sounds about right.
Oregon State, yeah, this is a good position to be in, right? Against Oregon State last week, it seemed like they were throwing the ball downfield from what we could see in the game quite a bit.
Maybe too much.
Yeah, it was actually, it was a lot. Really hurt Jake Browning's completion percentage.
It did.
But
no longer number one in the country.
Any other general thoughts on Utah?
I mean, the other concern is you're playing this game at altitude.
Yes.
And Utah has been a tough place for people to play. They've got a very raucous student section. So all of that, I think, you know, the faster start you can get out to, the better. I think UW has only played in Utah, I believe, once since they entered the Pac-12 and won that game.
Yeah, when, what was the quarterback who's now?
Southern Miles.
No, not for the Huskies.
Oh.
Their quarterback got injured at halftime. I think it was Brian Johnson, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah, Brian Johnson got hurt, and then the Huskies came out and dominated the second half. Do you remember that?
It was already a close game in the
first
half,
right? It was close,
right?
And then Brian Johnson got hurt, and we just shut the door.
Brian Johnson, I think, is now their quarterback coach.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was him.
Yeah.
But I look at a team like Utah, and it's like, okay, just points a game, 56, or 58th for Utah. Even opponents' points per game, they're 33rd nationally. And then you look at the Huskies being top 10 in both of these categories. I mean, granted, Huskies are going to be statistically ranked better than probably anybody they play.
Yes, and then also the schedule that they faced has been remarkably easy. Utah did have a difficult non-conference game against BYU that they won.
Sure. The schedule that the Huskies have played has been remarkably easy.
Yeah, is that not what I said?
No, yeah, that's what you said.
Okay.
But it's still, you just looking at this game, and it seems like in almost every facet, kind of shocking in special teams, but in almost every facet of the game, the Huskies are just better, right? The thing that throws things off a little bit is just the win-loss, right? I would be a little bit more nervous if this was Pac-12 after dark.
That's true.
A 7:30 very start true. On Halloween weekend, I'd be a little bit more scared. But I like that it's 12:30 start, right?
Yeah, and how do you feel about game day being there?
Game day is going to be there?
Yeah, you weren't aware of that?
Wait, what?
I guess this is an issue of us not speaking to each other. You were unaware.
Yeah, we should have been talking.
Yeah.
But game day is going to, I love it.
Yeah, it is a marquee game, and probably.
That's amazing. Is this the first time they've been in Utah?
No, they were actually there last season.
Were they really?
For Utah Cal.
Wow. Was that a good game last year?
It was an okay game.
It's fine. They just love
I remember
Utah.
Watching
Game Day just loves Utah. We were trying to think of like any time when Game Day could come here, but the best remaining game is USC, and it just doesn't really make any sense. If we hosted the Apple Cup, it feels like we could get it back.
Yes.
That's kind of amazing, though. I like that. I'm going to wake up on Saturday morning and be watching them talking about our game.
Yeah.
Wow. Fluff pieces about Jake Browning?
Yep.
I love
those. He's not going to say anything.
Yeah, I love anybody on the Huskies not saying anything. Troy Williams, what was the quote that Troy Williams had this week?
Well, first off, he talked about putting up video game stats, which he later clarified was like an inside joke with his teammates, not like a boast about what he was going to
Does he have really low completion percentage in his video games?
I mean, look, a lot of times you throw deep a lot in video games. It's not necessarily a high percentage throws.
Like 7 touchdowns to 5 interceptions.
You're too hung up on that. Touchdowns to interceptions is a meaningless stat because it really is just your discretion about whether you throw or run the ball in the red zone.
Okay, let's just look at a quick comparison.
5 interceptions.
7-5 versus 26-2.
Which, those are video game stats. But Jake Browning, the Huskies, just throw it all the time in the red zone unless they run some sort of option with Jake Browning.
Yes.
Because they're really trying to get him the Heisman. But the other thing he said is, like, you know, this is the game I've been waiting for. Which, if I was Kyle Whittingham, I don't know if I'd want to hear that about week 8 of a season in which my team was 6-1, that my quarterback was like, 7-8. Now I'm really ready to get going.
7-1. It's week 9.
7-1. Week 9, yeah. All right.
this is what he's had it circled.
Hasn't cost them yet. The fact that Troy Williams is like not trying his hardest. Doesn't care. He's been waiting for this game.
Yeah, I just don't know if I really believe in that much, right? Like, is his outcome going to be that different?
No, I mean, it's not like you're not going to try that much harder.
Yeah.
All right. Chances of winning.
I don't want to go too high, right? Because it's every game is scary, right? The pressure is so high on the Huskies right now. If there were a different coach, right, with different preparation, who would allow the team to
rest on their laurels?
Yeah. Just get ahead of themselves, right? But you look at somebody like Coach Pete, who knows that they've done nothing and reminds them a lot.
And knows how to manage this kind of scenario where one loss can really just entirely change the trajectory of your season.
I just don't see the Huskies. I heard them be described earlier as like, having an off game against Arizona. It's like, I don't even think that's it. I don't think the Huskies played an off game. They just happened to have had a scenario where they came up against a team that was well prepared to play against them.
Yeah.
But the Huskies are prepared every game and focused every game. So if they were a different coach, I would say that this is a trap game as it is. I think there might be about a 75% chance of winning this one.
Naturally, as always, I was going with a 70% chance of winning, so stick to the usual trend of 5% lower time.
It's scary to say that, right?
But it is.
Look at it, and on paper, the Husky, not even
it's
on
the
paper.
It's the difference between the head and the heart here.
Well, I think statistically, aren't they like a 77?
The gambling odds say 77%. FPI says 79%, so somewhere in the high 70s.
But we just know that the Huskies are so much better, but we also know that the Pac-12 teams just lose.
That's the head and the heart.
Better
teams. I mean, I guess maybe it's a different part of the head. The memory and the, I don't know.
So we should logic. We should always be terrified.
Yeah.
Right?
Appropriate fear.
Yeah. We should have appropriate fear in this game. At the same time, in every single facet of the game, the Huskies should be better. And honestly, they should win this game by at least a touchdown.
I don't want to say that. Any win is a good win.
Yeah.
On the road against a ranked opponent.
And I really feel confident that Coach Pete will have them prepared to play this game.
I agree.
I don't think the moment's going to be too big for them. Also, it's Utah. Like, come on. How big could the moment be?
It could be pretty big. Game day is there, remember?
Game day also went to, like, North Dakota State last year.
Well,
that
moment turned out not to be too big.
For Carson Wentz?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Carson Wentz, who's now in the NFL, should we talk about the Seahawks?
what a transition.
Amazing. Very professional.
We need to talk about last week still.
Right? We do.
It was such a notable game, both at the time and throughout the week.
So much talk, so much it being put on a pedestal as an example of the decline of the NFL. That in the Eagles-Vikings game starring the aforementioned Carson Wentz.
Where are you at mentally with this tie? Because the thing is, we don't know how to act.
The more people like try to denigrate the tie, the more I defend
I love the tie.
Tie.
There we go. Toast to ties. Yeah, it's rationalization city over here.
You know what I'm thinking of it is? Like in soccer, again, like it's totally changed my perspective on ties. You go on the road against a tough team, you're trying to get the result.
Yep.
You might park the bus. Yeah. Play a really defensive style.
Yeah. Look, we're Italian soccer fans. We love ties.
We do. Right? There was no shootout at the end of this one, sadly.
There kind of was in both teams' hands. Kind of. Simone Zaza kicked one of those field goals.
But it obviously worked to the Seahawks' benefit vis-a-vis the Cardinals.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so here's the thing. I know. Well, I don't know this. But if I could put on my Nostra Tristan cap, right?
And you can again.
Yeah, finally. It's beautiful, right?
I spent is that a moth?
Is that what?
Is that a moth hole?
Oh, wow. It's been a while. Anyway, has to be redone, right? We're back. It's episode one again.
No, it's episode 26.
This tie, I think, will be the difference in something important at the end of the season.
Yeah, that's not really that bold of a prediction. I mean, the odds of having the exact same record, like having completely different records from everyone in terms of seeding, is pretty low.
But when I looked at Monday morning, I woke up and I went and looked at the NFL standings just to see what a tie looked like.
Where do they put it in the standings?
The first time I've ever seen one of these, right?
This is not the first time you've ever seen.
For us, this is the first time the Seahawks have ever tied.
Yes.
Is that true?
I think so.
There we go. So anyway, I'm not used to looking and seeing a tie.
All right.
And I see 4-1-1, and it looks so much better than 3-3-1, right? And I see that the Seahawks, when the Football Outsiders playoff odds release later in the week, that their odds basically are unchanged, and they were already very high. And I think to myself, this tie was amazing. And because then we were so close to losing.
Oh, definitely should have lost so many times. Yeah, I mean, I think the playoff odds were unchanged. I think the wild card odds were probably down and the division odds were up because of this.
Yeah.
They don't break that down in terms of the change week to week.
Very difficult for Arizona to catch the Huskies or the Seahawks.
Oh, this is a new trend now.
Arizona to catch the Huskies. We've already beaten them.
They probably are not going to catch the Huskies. I like our odds against Arizona.
But it's going to be very difficult for Arizona to catch the Seahawks, right?
Do you know that the Cardinals had a better point differential than the Seahawks?
I know. I saw that. I really hate it. Huh. Yeah. Well, we know that they were tied for at least one game. It was a push for at least one game. We know going into last week that it was the same point differential.
That is true.
But this tie, it could mean the difference between winning the division or not winning the division. It could mean the difference between getting a bye in the playoffs. It could mean the difference between getting the 3 seed or the 4 seed. But it's going to mean something important, right? And at the end of the year, we're going to look back and be like, thank God that we tied that game.
Unless we look back at the end of the year and like, man, if Steven Hauschka would have made that 27-yard field goal.
Are you doing any lamenting?
No.
I'm doing a little bit of lamenting.
Because that's just not how I operate. Like, I'm learning from Pete Carroll in the Win Forever philosophy. And I thought the most fascinating thing to come out of the tie was the contrast between how Bruce Arians talked about his kicker and how Pete Carroll talked about his kicker. Bruce Arians saying of Chandler Catanzaro, it's not high school that you get paid to make field goals. And Pete Carroll saying of Hauschka, he's our guy and we love him.
And we love him.
Just like Robert Covington.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce Arians not a great week for Bruce Arians.
Richard Sherman really kind of won that debate.
Yeah, he ended the debate right there.
He did.
Richard Sherman, he like cherry on top right there. Did you listen to Pete Carroll this week?
I still haven't.
Okay, Pete Carroll talked about the offensive line. This was, I thought, the craziest thing. Listen to the whole thing. It was like, okay, he even said, like, he's never tied before. He doesn't know how to process it either.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm just like you. The team is just like you. We don't know how to process it, right? I bet they're rationalizing so much.
No, I bet they're moving ahead to week
seven, which we will do in 1 second. But I thought the most interesting thing that he said was that Russell had a lot of time to throw the ball. He said he thought the line, he was complimentary of the line,
huh?
Which I thought was amazing. And really, when you think about it, I mean, being in the game and watching it and now looking back, it's like, why didn't this work? And I don't know. There were a couple series where the line was an issue, right? When it was like a second and 30. There were two consecutive holding penalties. Okay, that was the line's fault. But you look at all that he was saying, even in the first half, it's the difference between making one third down completion, right?
Yeah. Which there were a lot of drops.
There were a lot of drops and just a lot of things that went slightly wrong that got the offense off schedule.
Yeah.
Right? And he I didn't mean, He was saying that Russell only got sacked one time, and he said that he had time to throw the ball. The only thing that I lament, though, if we can step back, is the 3rd and 4, the first time the Seahawks had the ball in overtime, where they subsequently hit a field goal. And it was a 3rd and 4, and if they get 4 yards, it feels like they're going in for a touchdown.
That was the Jimmy Graham play?
And they threw deep to Jimmy Graham, and it was clear that Russell and Jimmy were just not on the same page.
Now, Daryl Bevel talked about this today. He said that it was just a failure to execute. It wasn't that they were on different pages.
Really? And then they hit the same pass or something similar to Jermaine Curse on the next series.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. We should pause on this briefly. Russell Wilson's injury and how it's affected the Seahawks stats. Russell Wilson is actually getting sacked significantly less this season.
Yeah.
A 5.2% adjusted sack rate, which is 13th in the league. Last year, I would have to go back to last year, but I'm pretty sure they were in the 20s and probably in the high 20s in adjusted sack rate.
Especially at this point last year.
They were 30th at the end of the season. So
good about that line at the end of the year.
A big part of it is Russell Wilson trying to scramble. Like, quarterbacks that scramble get sacked more. So by being less mobile, he's getting sacked less.
He's throwing a lot of passes away.
But where this is hurting the Seahawks is in terms of the run game.
Yes.
Which, that's a concern to me that, I thought that early in the season, it was basically Christian Michael was running the ball well. It was basically just because Thomas Rawls was so bad that it was dragging down the entire team stats the first couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Lately, that has not been the case. And Michael has been, at 3.3, 3.4 yards per carry for 3 weeks in a row against decent to middling run defenses.
Yes.
So I really want to see the Seahawks run the ball well this week.
It was interesting also, Pete Carroll talked in a show about Thomas Rawls. He was saying that he still thinks it's amazing how committed to Thomas Rawls they are. And it makes you remember just how great he was last year.
I mean, he was the best running back in the NFL.
He was better than David Johnson. But Pete Carroll is saying, having Thomas gave them such a different element, and having both Thomas Rawls and Christian Michael. I thought that was interesting. I thought most people had moved on. It meant that I didn't drop him in my fantasy league. I was like, Rawls is coming back. I'm going to need him in the fantasy playoffs.
Yeah, it means that they're both going to split carries, and neither of them will be valuable for you whatsoever. That being our fantasy talk for the week. And the other interesting aspect that came out today is Pete Carroll saying that Bradley Sewell feels well after his sprained MCL and is trying to convince them to let him play this weekend.
Yeah, because we're just all about playing on sprained MCLs.
Yes. I mean, it's not actually a situation where usually you can do more damage. You just need a brace to stabilize the knee is the word I was looking for there. But it does compromise your mobility, as we've seen with Russell Wilson. So Bradley Sewell's mobility, maybe not ideal in the best of circumstances. So we'll see on that one. But then the other interesting revelation that Reese Odhiambo has been getting work at left tackle this week in addition to George Fant. I have no particular opinion of him, but trying to go from left guard to left tackle in the middle of your rookie NFL season, that's a bit to ask. Although, on the other hand, George Fant had literally never played football before this year, and he's out there playing left tackle overtime of the Cardinals game. So this is just what we're doing
Chandler
now.
Jones after not having played football.
He wasn't that bad. He had the early hold, I should say, but after that, I mean, the Seahawks offense played at its best with George Fant at left tackle. That's why I was kind of inclined to just ride with him this week.
George Fant for left tackle. I think the Cardinals defense might have been kind of exhausted. Anyway.
But they shouldn't have been. They had barely been on the field. The Seahawks defense should have been exhausted.
That's the thing. Okay, this is the other thing. We need to talk about this. The Seahawks had one of the greatest feats of human strength, and people only could talk about how bad of a game it was. It's talk about how superhuman it was that they were able to play for so many minutes and so many plays in such a brutal sport. And somebody like KJ Wright, so solid the entire game. Bobby Wagner still able to jump over the line on the last play after, I think Bobby Wagner, he missed one play when he had to go get an IV, right? And people have the gall to say that this was hard to watch.
Oh, this wasn't entertaining enough for you? Sorry.
Are you not entertained? Anyway, we're so defensive.
Oh, yeah. The most.
Anyway, let's talk about the Saints.
Let's talk about the Saints. So I think this will be a slightly more offensive game than last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Thanks, why it looks slightly different in this one.
I think so, because the Saints rank fourth in offense in DVOA and 29th in defense.
It's going to be actually a really fascinating matchup.
Yeah, because the Seahawks, you know, I think we talked about this as a possibility going into the, what game was that? Now I've lost track of, a couple weeks ago, I said that it might be a high-scoring game similar to the Steelers game.
Oh, the Falcons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which didn't necessarily end up being that way. Was for stretches, maybe.
But there was some offense in that game.
There was definitely on offense. Both sides of the ball. Oh, yeah.
It actually, when we're facing the NFC South.
I don't know if it'll be the same against Tampa Bay. We'll see. But this is another of those games where New Orleans has only allowed less than 27 points once all season.
That's amazing. Yeah, the Falcons defense
allowed 13 to the Giants. Really an inexplicable performance.
Yeah, that was a shocking performance. I don't know what happened there. But not quite at the same level on the far extremes in that Falcons game, but it is very similar. It's kind of shocking how similar those two teams are.
Especially given the fact that Atlanta is atop the NFC South and New Orleans at 2-4 has more or less been written off.
So we have the Saints offense ranked number 4 per DVOA versus the Seahawks defense ranked number 3.
This is strength versus strength. So I think what's interesting here is the Seahawks defense is a little bit more balanced than the New Orleans offense, which has not run the football that well this season.
Yeah,
Mark Ingram's been kind of meh as a runner. He's been a threat for them coming out of the backfield, and that's a little bit of a concern, I think, in this game.
Yes.
But Drew Brees just has so many weapons.
Yes.
Which he always seems to, but no Jimmy Graham, no Marcus Colston, and they've just got all sorts of new guys. Mike Thomas.
Yeah, Mike Thomas. Where did this dude come
top
from?
Top 10 receiver in the NFL.
And he's a rookie?
Yes.
Where is he from?
I don't know. It's not the it's not the other Mike Thomas.
Though. Arizona?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess he went to Kansas State. So anyway, Mike Thomas, the rookie out of Kansas State. But then you have Brandon Cooks, right? Their draft pick out of Oregon State.
But Brandon Cooks is actually, I think, pretty clearly their number 3 receiver in terms of effectiveness.
And in between them is?
Willie Snead. He's had a nice year.
Three-headed monster for the Saints. It makes me a little bit nervous with the Seahawks defense, where it feels like the Seahawks can shut down almost any running back. I mean, even they did a pretty good job against David Johnson last week, right?
Yeah, given the number of carries he had.
So we can probably assume that the Saints are not going to run the ball very well in this game. But are there going to be open receivers?
I mean, at some point there are going to. You're not going to shut down the Saints. Also, Michael Thomas went to Ohio State.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah. Do you remember him from Ohio State?
Not really. I don't watch much college football outside the Pac-12.
I mean, they were like Ezekiel Elliott, Michael Thomas.
That was a pretty good team, as it turned out.
Yeah. Cardale Jones. That was a good team. What about the Saints rushing, though, first?
Yeah, you know, like I said, Mark Ingram's had kind of a mediocre season. I'm almost a little more scared of Tim Hightower, who's averaging 4.6 yards per carry off the bench for them.
But they still haven't been bad running the ball, right? They're kind of middle of the pack.
Yeah.
And the Seahawks have been very good.
Yeah. Right? I don't think the Seahawks will be as good in this game because of the fact that you'll be playing so much nickel. You're not going to be focused on stopping the run the same way I think you were last week when the Seahawks didn't seem that scared of Arizona beating them deep.
Yes. And then passing, the Saints ranked number 4, right, with all of these options against the number 5 secondary in the league.
Yeah, I mean, if you can play them to a draw, then I think that's going to be good enough.
We can play anybody to a draw.
Well done. Yeah. Well done.
Who will take a draw? I mean, I don't think we would take a draw in this game.
Not quite the same. Yeah.
I feel like I'm going to predict, if I can put on my Nostra Tristan hat again, I took it off. I don't think there's going to be a tie in this game.
Bold.
Yeah.
Bold.
What about the Seahawks on offense?
I mean, so this is where the Seahawks should have the edge because this New Orleans defense is just so bad. And the thing is, they're really kind of balanced in their
Yeah, they're bad at everything. It's not just that they're like have a bad secondary, or can't stop the run. They're bad at all of the different parts of defense.
They're bad for the cycle. So they're 28th in passing defense DVOA, and they're 28th in rushing defense DVOA.
Yeah. Well, at least they're balanced.
So like I said, if the Seahawks don't get going on the run, on the ground in this game, then it's going to start to officially be a concern for me.
Yes. then all of a sudden Pete Carroll doesn't pretend like he's not aware that Joe Staley is available, right? Because the trade deadline's next Tuesday.
I mean, I still don't see that as a likely move for the Seahawks, any sort of in-season trade. I do think it increases the urgency to get Thomas Rawls back at that point.
Okay, he's injured. It's like,
well, I mean, Carroll has been talking about him, I think, returning, I think it's next week, the week after this. So
I'm not holding my breath on that one. But it increases the urgency at getting Rawls back and looking at a different style of running, right?
Yeah.
Because maybe Thomas Rawls' cutback running is what the Seahawks need right now.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, they need to get offense going. And if they don't, I would be surprised if they didn't, right?
I mean, I don't have almost any concerns about the Seahawks' ability to pass the ball in this game.
Yes.
Because first off, you want to talk about the offensive line and pass protection. Well, the Saints are 26th in adjusted sack rate.
There we go.
Their leading pass rusher is their defensive tackle, Nick Fairley, who's got 3.5 sacks and also missed practice, I think, today, or at least was limited. So they've got some issues there. And then you look at them defending against they've actually been pretty good against number one receivers. They're 7th amongst them, yeah, against them, which is surprising because of the fact that their top cornerback, Delvin Bro, has been out since week one with a broken fibula.
Who even knows what that means at this point, though, in the NFL? I feel like the idea of...
What's a number one receiver?
Yeah, number one receiver, number one corner.
Well, they shut down Julio Jones. That's a very clear number one receiver. I mean, presumably that means they're giving you a lot of safety help in, yeah, those matchups. That's probably not
and
something they're going to
other
do.
Things open.
Yes, because they're at least 26, at best 26 against number two wide receivers, slot receivers, tight ends, and running backs.
Man.
So that's pretty much, that covers everything.
This is definitely, you know, the Seahawks have a tight end who used to play in New
I've
Orleans.
Heard that.
I mean,
I think he's the guy who they're going to give double team coverage against this.
Doesn't it feel like they're going to go out of their way to try to stop Jimmy Graham from having a huge game against them?
Sean Payton kind of tried to downplay it when he was asked about it in practice. Like, look, there's good players that we play against every week, and Jimmy is a good player, and we're going to game plan for him just like everyone else. Like, no, there's more to play here.
But that just means if that does happen, that maybe their advantage against Doug Baldwin goes away, right? Or their advantage against, and it might be, you know, who needs a breakout game? Tyler Lockett.
Yeah,
right.
It's true. He's been kind of invisible lately.
We haven't seen that much from Tyler Lockett in quite a long time, right? So could we see a deep pass? I mean, Lockett and Kearse. Kearse had a nice catch in overtime last week, but those guys might all of a sudden be factors here.
It was a rare play where Kearse was not called for offensive pass interference. You know, there was something we were talking about during the game on Sunday that I think is relevant here, which is the Seahawks' best receiver is the open man.
Yes. I think I was actually talking about the Cardinals, but yes.
You were, but then you mentioned about the Seahawks as,
yeah,
well.
I mean, every team's best receiver is the open man.
Yeah.
Except for Gronk.
Or Julio Jones, maybe.
Yeah. But that's what Russell Wilson does, right? And that's what seeing something like this makes you feel good about, is that there's going to be an open man on every play, right?
Presumably. I'm not kidding. I did literally every play.
I mean, the Seahawks are going to score points in this game, but the Saints are going to score points also.
Yeah.
So if you look at it as far as strength on strength, offense and defense, it's not necessarily, it's also strength for the Seahawks against weakness, right? So you can see a clear advantage.
Well,
there.
I mean, the Seahawks are 20th in offense. I wouldn't call it a strength at this point. And as much as everyone wants to say, you know, some people want to point out, Seahawks fans want to point out, the team already struggles earlier in the year. This is the worst the Seahawks have been through week 7 in terms of offensive DVOA, almost exclusively because of the fact that...
Is it really? This is worse than last year?
Last year they were 15th through week 7, and then finished the season number 1. In 2013 they were 12th and finished 7th. In 2014 they were actually 6th at this point of the season offensively.
It's funny that seemed low to us.
Yeah, but... I mean, it's almost entirely because of the run game. The passing game is probably better than it was at this point. I couldn't find that breakdown, but I assume the passing game is better than it was a year ago at this point.
And this is the worst run game that we've had to begin a season in the Pete Carroll era.
Not even close.
Or in the Russell Wilson era.
Yes.
Yeah. But still, it's not exactly weakness against weakness, right?
No.
And we know that there's capacity for more for the Seahawks, right? You don't want to just judge it on how they've done so far this season, because they did finish first in offense last year. It's not like the Saints were the number one defense last year, right?
No, they were, I'm pretty sure, number 32. Yeah.
Brandon Browner was on the team.
He was.
So we have a history of bad defense for the Saints and a history of good offense for the Seahawks. It's something where it's a work in progress, but as Pete Carroll would say, we're going to get there.
So the other advantage for the Seahawks in this game could be special teams.
Yes.
New Orleans has been excellent with in terms of punting. I believe that's Thomas Morstead.
Yeah.
That sound right?
That sounds right.
But really basically bad everywhere else in terms of special teams, including kicking.
Including, yeah.
Which the Seahawks have benefited.
Who's their kicker?
Will Lutz.
He's their kicker?
I think so.
This person who I've never heard of. Oh, well. I was expecting it to be somebody who's been on a million teams.
Yeah, no, it's Will Lutz. Will Lutz with one L.
Okay. In his first name.
Yes. Okay. Simply only one L in the second name. He is 7-11 of 11 this season, including a miss from 30 to 39 yards, and then he's 2 of 5 on 50-plus yard kicks.
And also playing in a dome. That's worse.
Yes.
Yeah. So that could be a factor. I mean, to me, it shouldn't be... I feel like it shouldn't be that close of a game.
I still think it should be a close game. I mean, the line is, what, Seahawks by 3.5, I think?
I think the line is artificially low because of how badly the Seahawks played last week.
It should be Seahawks by 2.5.
How badly the Seahawks offense played last week. Right. It would be really nice to see an offense that just has long, controlled drives, right? I mean, the thing is, they will have the option... Big plays will be available at various times, but it'd be really nice to see.
Like the option, like, should we complete a long pass now? Yeah, let's do that. That seems fun.
It's going to happen. They're going to complete long passes at various times.
Yes.
Right?
I mean, that's what they do.
But it'd be really nice to see a game where they don't have to rest on the defense and they can keep Drew Brees off the field.
Yes.
Where they can have drives of 5, 6, 7 minutes, right?
Are you concerned at all about a fatigue carryover from the game on Sunday? Because I'm a little concerned about that.
I'm a little concerned about it. That's why I'm saying I think we need, not offensively, right? The offense shouldn't be exhausted. They had plenty of time to rest.
It's very true.
This wouldn't be a game where I would be completely upset if the Seahawks didn't defer.
Interesting.
Normally, I would feel like both of our perspectives is that if we defer, it's bad news. Or if we get the ball first to begin the game, it's very bad news.
Yes.
Right? It's pretty much the worst thing that could possibly
happen.
Makes
us uncomfortable.
This would be a game where if the Seahawks could get the ball and get a drive going, I think just even morally, right, for the defense to see that, hey, the offense is going to move the ball here. Because you saw Pete Carroll at the end of the half, right? At the end of the first half against Arizona. There were 3 or 4 halves in that game. But at the end of the first half, go out there and... like celebrate with every single defensive player who was on the field. Like, granted, it was a great stand to stop them from getting points. They ended up not getting points because Bruce Arians wasted a timeout throwing a challenge flag. But I think he realized that it's demoralizing for a defense to be out there and get the ball back without allowing your opponents to score and then have a 3-and-out.
Bruce Arians didn't say that it was... He gets paid to not throw his challenge flag when you can't challenge a play.
Yeah, where was that? Where was that criticism? Maybe Chandler Catanzaro should have. He probably would have been cut. He shouldn't have done that. But
behind closed doors.
It would be very nice to see a drive, right?
Sure.
To see a long, sustained drive that ended in points would be huge, I think, for this defense to see.
Yeah.
So it's one game where I wouldn't mind the Seahawks getting the ball first.
I say stick to what you've done well.
Well, you trust in the process.
Yes.
Of course.
And by the process, we mean Joel Embiid. All right. Chances of winning?
70%.
That's confident. I'm only at like 60%.
I mean, really?
Vegas's implied odds are like 56. Really, so it's a rare case where I'm more optimistic than Vegas.
I really think the Seahawks should win this game, and I think they should win it pretty easily.
There are not a lot of easy wins on the road in the NFL. The Seahawks road games this season, there's not. What would you describe as easy about them?
The Jets now look so bad. Going into that Jets game, they didn't seem that bad, but now we realize just how bad they are.
Yes.
What are the Seahawks 1-1-1 on the road?
They are.
I think that this is set up. I think it's set up very nicely for the Seahawks. I like seeing a good offense going against this defense and playing against a very bad defense.
It's going to be an interesting game. I'm excited for it.
I'm excited for it, too. I like 10 a.m. games.
Oh, I hate 10 a.m. games. Love I'm very. I games. Wish it was at 1 p.m.
I don't like 1 p.m. games. I like them at home, but I don't like a 1 p.m. road game. I like a solid 10 a.m. road game.
You can't watch Red Zone as much.
Well, yeah.
And there's only two late games. Red Zone's going to be terrible for the late games.
We'll flip.
Okay.
We'll be fine.
If you say so.
Yeah.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.